business for this evening, so now we'll go under, got one case under old business, and that's case number 11,357, Keith Riker. And we tabled this, we were waiting, or left it open, we were waiting for pictures of the property.
Yes.
And we didn't have them at the last meeting yet, did we?
We had pictures, but no explanation, they weren't numbered, so it was kind of difficult. I'm going to read what was provided by Melissa on the board's behalf.
Okay.
On April 15th, myself and the inspector of the area, Dean Pettijohn, went on site to take pictures of the property. Pictures 1 through 4 are pictures of the well below the gazebo. There is a trap door in the floor under the table that accesses the well, so you don't even know the well's there. 5 shows that portion of the shed next door that appears to have been rebuilt. 6, the stairs accessing the upstairs to the pole barn. 7 through 9 shows the side where the upper decks meet the lower in between the house and pole barn. 10 shows the inside of the downstairs part of the pole barn. There's no steps on the inside. 11 shows the inside of the upstairs of the pole barn. I did not see signs of a business located inside the pole barn. It appears to be all storage as of the date of this picture.
And what was
well does not appear to be new by the pictures. So I'll pass those down. Okay. And they're black and white, because, and she's got them identified by number. If you remember when we looked at the evening of the last meeting, I advised that I did have the pictures, but I didn't know what they were pictures of.
Right.
No identification. So they clarified that by giving some kind of instruction.
Thank you.
Lawrence, what happens is, as far as the, on the rear, the property adjacent to the rear of this property, where the applicant tore down the shed that he thought was his, it turned out to be the neighbor's, and then he rebuilt it without a permit. Does that permit have to be issued?
No matter who tore it down, it would have to be a permit.
Right.
No question about it. So there has to be a permit for that building. I was looking for the other pictures. I thought I had more pictures in color. There were pictures submitted either by the applicant or some opposition that were pretty clear, but the pictures that we took are those same pictures, except they were printed in color, and the printer only would print black and white when they ran them the other day.
The gazebo, I see with that 22-foot, the gazebo here, 22-foot variance that he wants that says it's non-conforming. Is that the gazebo?
The variance of 9.1 from the required 10-foot rear, that's for the second-story landing. Mm-hmm. Variance of 9.6 from the required 10-foot side, that's for a second-story deck.
Right.
22-foot from required 30 front yard, that's the well and the pump house.
Gazebo. Right.
And over top that is a gazebo.
And, yeah, that's what they stated. But
it right. They call it a pump house.
And they may be calling it the pump house. 9.2 from the required 15 corner setback for a second-story deck also.
Right.
Okay, so in other words, on the gazebo
pump house,
they needed, or the pump house, whatever you might want to call it, they would need a permit to put that up also, wouldn't
yes,
they?
Yes, they would need a permit for anything that they built.
Okay, so that means that that's not conforming. It's saying it's non-conforming, so the 22-foot variance is not non-conforming. Not non-conforming.
It might have been when it was a pump house.
Well, it may have been at one time.
Well, that's not
replaced.
What we're looking at now.
Yeah, it's a gazebo now.
Sounds like it was
gazebo.
Replaced. Right?
He said it was replaced.
Yeah.
So they need a permit to replace it.
So they need a permit to replace it.
That's
my
right.
Point exactly. Because that was December 26th, 2013, that this survey was taken. Okay, so they don't have a permit for that. Okay, so it's not non-conforming as far as the structure.
The well and pump house, according to Melissa's pictures or description, is under the gazebo.
Right. Okay. But the gazebo is over top of both of them, so that makes it not non-conforming. So that needs a permit.
Well, yeah.
Need a variance.
From what I gathered, there was a pump house, and
there was a shed
over a shaft.
Yes.
And they decided to make it nice and pretty and new, and they put a gazebo over it.
And so that means that they need a permit for that.
Which, yeah. They did a lot, they seem to have done a lot of things without a permit.
I'd like to go through, Mr. Chairman, just what I think on this, just to give the board my feelings, and then we'll go from there. If you look at the dates, I went with the dates of these permits that were taken and what the problems were, et cetera, and when they were in violation. So if you take the important thing is you get a building permit, right, for a structure, accessory structure, from Delmar Pool Building Supply. That was on 13, I'm sorry. So it said, I want a detached garage. They want it to be the size of a 22 by 25 detached garage. And it says open ceiling, no second floor. No second floor, important. The structure cannot give the 5-foot setbacks. It's got to be under 600 square feet. Building code said, fine, the structure is going to be 400 square feet. It says it right there. Okay, so that was, they were given all the setbacks, the height, everything right on the building permit and signed by Eddie Parker, who is the official building code at that time. So it comes along on 10/31/13, and however, whether someone blew the whistle or whatever, came along and asked planning and zoning to check out the building, because they're building without permits. How they knew, I don't know. So the second floor, he tells the inspector, Dean Prettijohn, tells Mr. Riker that he's in violation and the second floor setbacks are illegal, which means decks and steps. The accessory structure now exceeds 600 square feet in area. Very, very plain, very, very plain. So now he doesn't respond. So now the violation had to be sent to the constable's office for further business, okay? On 1/23/14. Now on 1/30/14, Mr. Riker came in, had to get two more surveys and fill out the application for a variance, and they want him to, and he had to, at that time, that was what, 1/30/14. Now look at the time frame between all this going back and forth, and he claimed that the Delmarva Pole Building put out the structures to put the steps in.
But the original permit was not for a second
floor. That's right. The original permit, my point being, was not for those steps, okay? He did that on his own. Mm-hmm. He didn't get a permit for it.
He said they think he had to go and they obtained one for doing that with. They run
those. He went through everything else and dandy because he knew he had to have a permit for that.
Right.
No, and now all of a sudden he says, oh, geez, I didn't know I had a permit for, need a permit for. And oh, okay. I didn't know I. The setbacks won't be here. You know, I just. Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me that anyone would. In his position, I think he said he was in some kind of law enforcement in Philadelphia or somewhere, that would not know the procedures of trying to get and abide by the law, so to speak. He knew he had to have something.
Yep.
And to me, I would say that the unnecessary hardship or exceptional practical difficulty has been created by the applicant. So So I would deny case number, let me say 11,357 based on my reasons.
Mr. Berman, how do you feel?
I mean, he was completely wrong in what he did. I would have no problem leaving the back step up, make him tear the rest of it down. At least it would have a way to get to the second floor.
It wasn't supposed to be there?
It wasn't supposed to be there.
None of them was supposed to be there anyway.
Doesn't he have to? I don't know, you know, we're here to determine whether he did, you know, if the variance. And here is the situation where he's actually now in violation with building code. Because if he has a second floor, he must meet some stringent, building code.
Rules.
Must go by the code. We go by the code of Chapter 115. They have one of their own. And what is it? The Southern, is it, Lawrence?
Southern Building Code.
What is it?
Southern Building Code.
Southern Building Code now. And he must go by that. And the building code department told him and wrote down that he must not open up that top floor.
There was a Southern.
What's that?
There was a Southern. It may be American building code.
Is it American now? Is it American?
Well, it's whatever.
It's still a code requirement.
National building code, and I just don't remember.
National, right.
Oh, boy, John.
The county has a building code.
Yes.
Yeah, right. It's kind of building code.
Yes.
But I
and
can't remember the type.
That's what they practice.
Yeah, let me take that back then.
Mr. Workman's going to retract it. Now you want to go again?
Yeah, he can take all of it off and put stairs inside then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He could do that.
Yeah.
Right. So,
but he has to go back to building code to do all this, and he's just trying to get around that.
So you're in favor of with Mr. Mr. Rickers, just deny it.
Because he can go inside and do that.
Yep.
Yes, he can.
Mr. Hudson?
I'm in favor of denying it also. It's clear that he built the decks without the proper permits and led the county to believe that it was going to be a single story or not have a upstairs to it.
Yep. Mr. Mills?
I'm inclined to deny it. I don't see where he's shown uniqueness. There's lots of narrow, shallow lots, and the property was already developed. He asked for a certain structure and built well beyond what he had asked for. So I think it was created by the applicant. And obviously it's had an effect on neighboring and adjacent properties. We heard testimony that he tore down the neighbor's shed and then rebuilt it without a permit. I just don't see where he needs relief.
And I, Mr. Galvin, also can vote in denial of this because I feel he did not meet the standards for granting a variance, especially number three. This was created by the applicant. So therefore, I will vote.
That's
so I have
motion
a motion
anyway.
By Mr. Rickers. Do I have a second to that then?
Next question first.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Lang?
All the conversation appeared to be the pole building. They were also applying for the gazebo.
The same.
Same.
I just want to make sure you're discussing both issues. That's all in the motion.
Okay.
Was that just discussion or
that was discussion.
Motion? Yeah.
Just a question.
You want to make a motion? You going to make a motion?
We made a motion. We need a second.
I thought it was discussion.
Discussion.
No, I said I would make a motion.
But there was no second.
There was no second.
No second yet.
Originally, you started as a discussion.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
you just made a motion.
Right.
Yes.
A few seconds ago.
Okay.
But I got a question.
Sure.
Are you making for the wellhead too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of it.
All of it.
Denying all of it.
He put that gazebo up without a permit also.
Let him start from scratch, is my opinion.
Sure today.
Let him come back and go through the proper process.
There you go.
Now, let me ask another question. I mean,
can
he come back and ask for a variance for the pump house?
Not again. Not as it stands.
No,
if he makes
something substantially different.
If he comes back and says, you know, he wants to make modifications to what he's created,
right.
and ask for a variance, he can do that if it's different. Okay. And we'll have to determine first if what he's asking for is different.
Yeah.
So you'd we're going to make him, part. Everything's coming down, in other words.
Basically, everything's coming down. He's going to restart it.
Okay. So I have to make that motion again? Is that it? I made the motion. Mr.
Why don't you do it again? Yes.
Okay. Why don't you do it again? First we discuss, and then he changed it to a motion, but let's start new. Okay, now you'll make a motion.
I'll make a motion that we deny case number, I even forgot what case it was.
11,357.
11,357.
Okay.
Because I believe the applicant made the hardship and exceptional practical difficulty. He has made the unnecessary hardship and exceptional practical difficulty by the applicant. The applicant has made the hardship on himself. I make that a motion.
Okay, now I have a motion on the floor for Mr. Rickards. Do I have a second to that motion?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Rickards and a second by Mr. Workman that we deny case number 11,357. All those in favor of the motion, Mr. Mills.
In regard to the standards for granting a variance with this case, I don't see where it's unique. There's nothing unique about the property situation, in my opinion. Obviously the property was already developed and can be developed in strict conformity, that the situation was created by the applicant, that it has and does impair the use of adjacent and neighboring properties and not necessary to afford relief. So, aye.
Okay. Mr. Hudson?
Aye, for the reasons that have been stated.
Again, Mr. Rickards?
Aye, for the reasons that have been stated.
Mr. Workman?
Aye, for those reasons stated.
And I, Mr. Calloway, for the previous reasons that have been stated. So by a vote of 5-0, case number 11,357 is denied. Gentlemen, that is all that then we have for this evening. I just have one other thing. Is there anything for the good of the board or good of the order of the board from anybody?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I attended the Board of Adjustment Delaware Planning Education Program. That was on May 9th. And I passed out, made sure you all had a copy of what transpired there and what the university and their lawyer, Max Walton, and Linda Raybob, I believe, presented the seminar, and also what it said was the board's rule. I just thought I'd just bring some things out that he was very, very adamant about. And you had an awful lot of people up there from Newcastle, Kent County, Newark, Delaware Beaches, Rehoboth, Dewey, and a lot more, and I just didn't take them all down. You can get a copy of that if you want. The board's role, we certainly are doing that. I was applying everything to our board as they went through these different subjects that they had. And the board procedures, we do all that. And if you keep going with me over to 5 and the records of oath, that's page 5. That's self-explanatory to you, but I think on page 6, it says here that the chairman can place any time limit on public testimony, and I know you've been asked that before. And,
yes.
They said that you can do that. You've got to give a sufficient time, which was another question we had.
I think we do.
Yeah. Let me see. Exceptional practical difficulties. I think if you read that, it pretty much does everything that we say we are doing now. I think the most important one of these is important, number 7, and he kept coming back to this. And there was a lot of questions about this. The general principle that a zoning boards and commissions should not liberally grant variances. The applicant for variance has the burden of proof. Well, we know that. But I think the point that he was trying to get across was that the boards grants a lot of variances that they don't think that we should be granting in other words, that we're too easy on the boards. He said we should be a little tougher on, like RR is a chapter 115. He did say that Sussex County is unique, does not normally get into the problems that Newcastle County and Kent County, we have our own chapter 115 that we enforce.
And whose opinion was this?
This was the opinion of the
instructors.
Okay. And he's from the university. He was trying to compare different. And there was a question asked a lot. People ask up there that I didn't quite understand why they don't know this, but they did. They said, well, when you have all this paperwork piled up like this, and it's presented to you, and it's presented to cases. We had this case and that case. And Newark Board of Adjustment and some of their council people were there. And they said, well, what do we do? I mean, I can't devour all that. How would you go about that? And as an attorney, the attorney says, well, you have the ability to table it. And table it again if it doesn't come through to you, and table it again. So that was a point that he was getting to. And we do that. We do that. Special use, the decay with check factors, that we've heard that 100 times, I guess. The rule of exceptional practical difficulty, of course, they go through and they tell you, because the rule, of course, our rules are a lot different in Sussex County than it is up there, just so for your information.
Ask a question?
Sure.
Everett. Uh-huh. Their rules are based on the same rules or state regulation on what you do for, but in the state law, what we use for the creation of those standards for.
Yes, but there was a separate code section that applied to Sussex County versus the other two counties.
I was thinking that, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, at one point we'd investigated whether or not that's something the county should look at lobbying to have made the same, but then that would really change how you do work, so it's been left on the table at this point.
Yeah.
Would it be a disadvantage to us or be an advantage to us?
If the county decided to do that, I think they would want to come in, have a workshop with you and get input. We have looked at it. There are some aspects that would make it much easier for you because there's a lot of state law out there that you could look at and know that you had that for guidance, where a lot of times there's we don't have as much case law to look at. Because it's only one county going by that standard as opposed to theirs, but it would really change the way you do business. And I know the council and it's some of the administration had talked about it, and if they did that, they'd want to come back, talk to you and Lawrence and obviously the planning zoning staff.
There'd be more denials probably.
He indicated that just what I felt, you know. And also, by the way, right off the top of my head.
In many ways, we're totally unlike either of the other two.
Yes.
Totally
different. Well, let me tell you this. He told me, I told him a situation. I said that he and I had a lot of dialogue being Sussex County, so they knew we were there. What I said to him was, I said, at one point in time, I said, I was accused of making faces at applicants. And he went up that end, like lawyers do, and he comes back with his hands behind him, and he says, you can make all the faces you want. you know, he's looking at me doing that. And he said, if you ever sold judges or any, and he says, what you people have to realize, and he says, and I still don't know how to get this across to a lot of board members, that you are quasi-judicial. You are a judge. You are a judge. You are allowed your opinion. You're allowed to do these type of things. But, you know, there are manners.
There's,
you know,
body language, so, and there's interpretation of
body
language.
That's correct. That's right. And so, anyway, that's...
Opinions. Everybody's got one.
Oh, right.
That wasn't opinions, though, was it?
And when there's ambiguity, I thought this was interesting. When there's ambiguity in the code, you're required to resolve that ambiguity. That's vagueness. And I think that, I think Mr. Moore's office does that for us sometimes when we have some problems there. And we do have that. Sometimes I don't understand that, you know, part of the code or something. I think the other, let me see, appeals to Superior Court, we all know what that does and how to do it. And it might be, so long as the board's decision is fairly debatable and free from legal error, it will not be disturbed. This is important. Even if the judge might have decided the case differently. That's an appeal to Superior Court. So have all our T's crossed and our I's dotted, and they 9 out of 10 times will probably be agree with us.
Don't bet on it.
Well, basically with that's a principle that judges will not substitute their opinion for yours as long as you give on the record the reasons and you applied the correct standard. So that's the key. Always use the right standard, and that's why it's important that you articulate your reasons for voting and that those reasons are something in the record. And if you do, the judges do not like to come in because you get to see the people, you see the demeanor, you see all those things, and so they won't substitute.
Here's another question that people have asked. We've all asked this question. It is improper, on page 15, it is improper to rely on personal site visits and observation.
Supposed to be on the record.
Right.
Well,
think about that for a minute.
There's been.
But he said, if John's over so-and-so going through, and he happens to look at, something you may have on the agenda tonight, he can't stop me from looking at it. You know, he knows you're there.
Well, in the past, it's been, some of us board members have said, I would like to look at it.
Yeah.
We've stopped doing that.
Yeah.
As a board.
But there's been some questions.
But it's been suggested that we can't go look at a property, and I would disagree that we can't, you know, I think we can go look at a property, but I think that if we intend to include our observations in our decision, then we should make at the public hearing make those observations known.
Well, that's right.
So that's for the benefit of everyone.
Right. Well, his point was that, you know, it's better that you don't, because you have to really be specific about what you saw, what you did, to give the other, the opposition or the...
Even the applicant.
The applicant or any of them may see it differently. Now, that's what he said. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just taking what they say to me and trying to...
When I first started practicing, it was the planning, zoning, and the boards. They would always say, we want to go look at the property. And it was routinely done and oftentimes stated, well, I looked at this and it was okay. With court decisions now, it's okay to look at it, but when you give your reasons for voting, do not say, I've looked at the property and I like it. Give the reasons based upon the record.
Yes, he did say that. Yes, thank you.
And you might interpret those based on your observation.
But if we went and looked at the property and we said, and I'm trying to think of an example, something that pertains, like for example, you know, they've already set the double wide mobile home that's older than 5 years. And so I go and look at it, and I go, you know, it's dilapidated. It looks pretty bad. So if I make, in my opinion, it looks bad, and I make that observation known in the hearing, then that's appropriate.
Well, the way you would do that, I would suggest, is question the person concerning your observations.
Okay.
So then that person testifies concerning that, so then you have information concerning about your view in the record, and that person's testifying to it.
Well, that maybe that's the way he put it. I missed that part. He did say something of that order, that, you know, you've got to do something, but I let that.
The other way
Jamie.
To do it is hold the record open for the purpose of going out there, but I would prefer not to do
right.
that.
That's what he said.
Right, because it's not in the hearing.
That's correct, because
right.
people can't see what you're
doing.
So would it be inappropriate for us to take pictures and then bring them in for everyone to see?
If you do that, again, that's evidence then that's being circulated that was not introduced at the hearing when the record was open.
No. I mean,
is it
inappropriate for us to, prior to, go, if we see something, take a picture, bring it in for and put it on the record in the hearing?
At the original.
Well, I'm not. I would, if an inspector went out there and took the pictures, that's always submissible because that's the staff. They would introduce as part of their report. That is far better than one of you going
right,
out
okay.
there and taking the pictures.
Like we just did after the
yes.
fact on the record.
So if we got a question, I mean, we happen to be able to look at it, and we got a question, we can say, here, we'd like the office to go out and take pictures of it. And
hold the record open for that, just
that.
The way you did here.
So there's no need or purpose for us to go and look at properties.
This is what the point, you know, you guys just talked yourself into this.
No.
This is exactly what he was trying to say. And he, you know, just like Mr. Moore said, you can argue that point, but he said, you know, it's just not recommended. You know what I mean? These are common pitfalls that the Board of Adjustment gets into, not only us, but, you know, over the state. And when they, and I would suggest that you read the common pitfalls that on page 15. Here's another one. The entire board cannot go out after the hearing for dinner to discuss a pending application.
Well, we know that.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, I'm verifying what we were trying to get across to. What was the other, of course, bias?
I would suggest future agendas that if you're having a report back such as this, it should be listed on the agenda that you're having a report like
well,
this so that people could do it.
Yeah. Well, I had suggested that. I wanted to be on the agenda. Okay. The Board of Adjustment in Sussex County, I think that's interesting versus there's two cases here where we lost because of the fact that the terminology and everything, and they brought that up and they talked about that. We must have been famous or something up there. And
that was for applying the wrong standard. Was that the case where you said the wrong terminology?
Yep.
Yeah, and he made that clear to like Newcastle and all of them that we were the culprits. That, but it was very, very interesting. There was a lot of questions that were asked up there that we have covered. I really felt good that we have, you know, with our chapter 115, we have covered, and they're still struggling with some of theirs.
I've really got a question to ask you. Mm-hmm. This is brought up already. We got a lawyer up there, and he's up there bringing the case to us. Mm-hmm. Who's through the five standards. Why can't we just say, he met the five standards, his own record. Why do we have to go through the same thing again? You got a lawyer who went through all the five standards, or anybody who meet those standards. Why do we have to go back behind them and say the same thing? And they already said it. I don't understand that.
Because you're the ones voting, and you have to show that the reason you voted was based on those. And Traditionally, you'll see attorneys give a presentation, and maybe they turn to their client and say, do you agree with everything I just said?
Yes.
I was involved in a case after I first started practicing, and it was a Brittingham case, and it was out on east of Wilson Store. And in that, I had an extremely nervous client. We went through the hearing. I spoke for him because he said, I can't say a word. Went to appeal. We lost. And that was the case that said, what an attorney says is not evidence in a case. It takes the person. But fortunately, the appeal took so long that we were able to come back. We applied. When we applied on the case, we went out to everyone in the neighborhood, had just lots of people sign individualized petitions. We had someone ride up and down the road take pictures. So we had all those people as the witnesses to testify. And then when all of that was done, I asked him, you've heard everything that was said. All those other people are allowed to testify as witnesses. But I said, you've heard what I've said and everyone else. Is everything true and correct, to best of your knowledge? And he said, yes. And they started appeal, and then they dropped it. So that's why, number one, what an attorney says on their own if they don't have a client. If you grant it, I mean, it could go through and no problem, but if anyone appealed it, they're in trouble.
Yeah, but if it has a client there and he does agree.
And he says, is everything I said true and correct? Do you affirm what I said? That's taking that in. That client has just testified and said everything that is said there.
Yes.
They are allowed to do that, and it's prudent for them to do that for that reason. Now, when they make their statement, you shouldn't just say, I agree with all the reasons the attorney said, so I make my motion based on that. Would that be sufficient? I think probably not. You're probably better to do what you are now. Okay. You're going through the reasons, and you're stating what those reasons are. The courts like to hear board members saying in their verbiage, here's why we granted something or why we didn't grant something. It's very important. Again, remember, the courts don't want to substitute their opinions for yours. So when they hear you giving and articulating your reasons, they go with that. It's much better.
He made that clear. He made that clear that, the judge does listen to what you say, when the case appears before him and what the dialogue is and also the minutes. That's the reason it's so important to have it all done.
Well, everything really changed in the last year then, year and a half, since I've been on.
Yes.
I mean, from what we did before when I got on, unbelievable then.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been significant changes in this. And if you hear, if someone says three reasons and you think there's a fourth reason that you like as well, when you vote, say, for the reason stated and this other reason, again, it shows that you all are giving reasons for your votes.
Yeah, and he pressed the point, John, that we are judges. He pressed that. You know, I don't know whether Newcastle or somebody's having a problem there, but we knew that exactly. And
in 22-23 years, Dale and I have seen many changes.
Oh yeah.
From rubber stamping mobile homes on less than 5 acres.
I don't even know I was a secretary then. I don't know why I even.
God.
It used to be a simpler life, but
that's back in the old.
Do you remember to buy a car, you signed one document?
That a day.
And to buy a house, you signed maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Now the car's 5 or 6.
Okay, then.
So
Dylan,
I tried to break the.
We appreciate it.
The air of there, a little seriousness. The one I asked him, I said, Max, before you leave, I said, you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do this nowadays. You should be doing this, you should be doing that. I said, can I ask you a personal question? And he says, what is it, bud? Because I kept interrupting him. He says, what is it, bud? By that time he knew the name. And I said, am I allowed to play golf with attorneys that appear before me? He leaves me and he walks all the way up to the end. Everybody's silent. And he walks all the way back and looks at me and he says, I have one answer for you. And I said, What's that, sir?
Retire.
Why would you? Why would you want to play golf with attorneys? What do you say?
You don't like what he said.
No. Go ahead.
Oh. No. Again,
Mr. Chairman, I'm allowed my
opinion.
Second.
I'm allowed my opinion.